welcome to another episode of the Endless Obsession, a Between the Bear and Me podcast. I am your host, John Bernardo, and with me, as always, is my brother from another mother, Josh Delaney. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm great. How are you? I like your intro this time around.
Oh, do you didn't like the other ones?
I liked them all, but this one, probably in the S tier.
Oh, whoa, I'm gonna have to step it up next time.
Yeah, we got it's only up from here, guys.
I'm gonna have to start ripping some stuff off some other hosts. Josh, this week we're touching on the what is known as like the band's masterpiece, Colors. It's one that people have continuously gone back to, and it were like Alaska was not even their peak, and that's crazy because that album is amazing. Mm-hmm. So like coming from Alaska and then coming to this, it's insane to see even where they are now. But this, I feel like this is really what started to mold what their future sound is. And we were talking about it before, but this is really like a 164 minute song. It's insane how well all the songs blend together.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done that in their old albums, but like this one, it is.
Yeah. The sonic all the way through. Consistency is unbelievable. It reminds me a lot of Dream Theater in a way, where they have like that album, 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence, and just like, oh, it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's broken up, but it's one like suite almost. And like that's what this album feels like to me.
Yeah, it's just and they do, it's definitely up to this point the most experimenting you've ever heard coming out of them.
They do so
many little fun little nicks and knacks and these little things, little sounds that we'll get into as we break down the songs, but they do so many little things that I just love hearing throughout them.
Yes.
So I mean, we'll rate it. We'll rank it at the end. You'd be surprised that after listening to this so many times, I'm thinking that this may not be my number one. But by the time we're done this,
so
and it's not a shot at the album. It's just like listening to it. I'm just thinking, like, was there hearing, you know, Future Sequence and Automata recently, and I'm thinking that it may not be my top one, but then, you know, I hit songs like Son of Nothing and I'm going, maybe it still is. I don't know.
So like, yeah, with this, I've mentioned it before, this was my intro to the band essentially. And mm-hmm. just to the short version of the story is in like 2007 when this album came out, I was also listening to Ireworks by the Dillinger Escape Plan. That was, which was my intro to that band, funny enough.
Yeah.
And I think both of these albums came out kind of near the end of the year. This album came out in September. I want to say Ireworks came out a couple months later. But basically, I was super hooked on Ireworks, loved every bit of it. And one of my friends in high school, who's a huge metalhead, he had like his finger on the pulse of just any type of metal, just like that dude was an encyclopedia. And he's like, oh, if you love this, like if you love Ireworks, you should check out this band called Between the Buried and Me. They just put out a new album a few months ago. You're going to love it, I guarantee it. And this is when I didn't have very good internet, so I couldn't, like, you know, download music or stream it, or, you know, anything like that. So I just went to, like, Best Buy, bought it on a whim because I was like, oh, that album cover is cool. Maybe my metalhead friend is onto something. And mm-hmm. I pretty much, like, just threw that in the car immediately, and for about the first 2 weeks of having this album, I got stuck on the first couple tracks, which we'll get into, but but then after that, I finally like digested the rest of the album, and I was just like, wow, this is a masterpiece. This is so much more than I was anticipating. So yeah, I was pretty much a fan from then. I went backwards from there, then yeah.
And then you went back to their other stuff, and did you start getting heavier after that, like heavier music?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, high school, I was probably like surface level into like metal, because high school was also, that was just like a musical awakening for me. I got into mm-hmm. everything. Like I was huge into like prog, which is funny because this album is very much inspired by like progressive rock. I got into like hip hop more around that time. And I was definitely like experimenting more with like listening to heavier music. So I was getting like, you know, I was trying to hit the extremes, you know, listening to like grindcore and like technical death metal and mathcore, and just like, it's like, I just need stuff that makes me full of rage right now. And but yeah, this was definitely like one of the ones where I was like, I will be listening to this for the rest of my life probably. And I was right. I revisit this one probably once every year or so.
Did you, for this review, did you listen to the new remix and remaster version or just the original?
The remix remaster, I figured it'd be appropriate since I've actually never listened to the remaster before.
Well, it's only a year old. I think they all came out in 2020.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, they did it up to The Great Misdirect. I'm surprised they went that far up because I just figured I figured those albums were done the way they wanted them to be done. I didn't think they needed to be remixed or remastered.
I don't know if that has anything to do with like the... I think the loudness wars were maybe over by that point, but yeah, I don't know. Just, I guess they maybe saw like, hey, there's a richness in these albums that isn't quite coming out anymore. Like, and hey, it's 2020. We have access to better equipment. Maybe, I don't know, but mix sounded great. Like I did hear stuff that I didn't really hear like in my shitty car CD player back in the day.
I actually had one problem with it, but I'll get into it when we get to that track.
Oh,
so
okay.
let's kick it off with track number one. So yes. the way they did this one is that they did the usual AB where they kind of split those songs up. So if they're both called Foamborn, this one's Foamborn Part A, the backtrack. And to me, this is the most, out of all of them so far, this is the most beautiful intro
to any
of their albums. You know what I mean? It's very like, very Beatles, like Beatles and what's the other one I'm thinking of? Bohemian Rhapsody.
I was going to say, I got a little Queen influence too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like
this whole, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's just got like that, like, it's like an introduction to like something big. So it reminds me of a lot of like the prog greats. So it's just like we're going to do this, like we're going to really build this up for you guys. Like, here's an introduction. We're setting the stage almost. Yeah. Like here you go.
Yeah. Like through the, it's like, you know, it's a minute or two. And through that whole part, they kind of go through a bunch of different styles and it's like a sample of what's to come. I'm not sure where it comes from on the, like if these two are connected. From what I can see, foam born is the idea of being born again in many different forms, like gas, liquids, and solids. Some people like to say that this is about growing old and realizing that the most important things are in your life. You know, even though the world gives you many up and down, you have to keep finding a way to make you truly happy. And the parent, like, I didn't hear it so much in the first one, but in part B, talking about writer's block, it's right in the first like lyric. He's like, I'll just keep writing.
Yeah,
it's right there in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Tom actually said the end of the song is basically saying thanks to all of those who enjoy the music and lyrics we create. A lot of bands take their lives for granted and forget that they are here because of their fans. So yeah, I always took these ones as definitely something from writing and, you know, personal experiences. Why don't you lay down your thoughts on this one though?
Yeah, just like the connecting thread between part A and part B is like the I will just keep waiting, you'll just keep waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And like part B especially, just when I read lyrics like, oh god, I forgot there's like 11 verses in this thing. this is labeled as verse 9, but where he says like, this block happens every year. And like I said before, the color keeps fading. This block happens every year. I couldn't trade this for anything in the world. And it's just like, damn. Or when he says, it's been a while since we've written each other and hopefully this will comfort you. Because like most of my kind, I won't take it all for granted, hopefully. And it's just like, yeah, that's like some really strong like visual imagery he's painting there about like, I guess you could say it's like probably about writer's block and like,
yeah, and it's like, you know, you can see it in those lyrics there that it's definitely talking to the people listening. You know, he's talking about, you know, you're gonna wait for me to come up with this music, but then when it comes to the you know, seeing black, that's just that's what that writer's block is. You know, I get it all the time, and you can hold your pencil or hold your instrument, and it just feels black in your brain. You know, usually I can see music in my head.
Yeah.
But when I have writer's block, it's just darkness. That's all you see.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. It just feels like, for me, like it feels like a literal wall. It's just like staring at a big like void. And it's just like, how do I break through this shit? Like right now I feel like this is all I'm going to see for the rest of my life. And it's like,
yeah,
like how do I get and out of this?
Yeah. And the trick is you don't. Like, you know what I mean? Like sometimes it's just you need to stop, turn around, and try to come back again tomorrow.
Yeah, or just like if maybe another door will open and you're just like, oh, I'll just try this instead. Like, I'll come back to this later.
Exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, musically, the way this song just like switches up at breakneck pace is insane. You know, it's definitely not the longest track on the album, which we'll find out soon enough. But I love like the little jazzy guitar bit. Like it's like 3 minutes and 40-ish seconds where it just like the heaviness kind of stops and that like little jazzy guitar bit comes in.
Are you talking about part B now?
Yeah, part B. Sorry.
Okay. I figure we're talking about
one thing basically.
Yeah. So part B, the decade of statues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so keep going.
But yeah, I really love that little break in the tension for a minute, and then it goes right back into being heavy while retaining that same like guitar melody. I just like I love the way this song changes up so much, and like even at the very end, it's just like this is where I'm like really bad at talking about the musical aspects of stuff, but it's just like
okay, try your best. Like, what does it feel like? What's the vibe you get, man?
Yeah, schizophrenia. No, it just really feels like they're like proggy inhibitions. They've just like dropped the weighted armor at this point, and they're like, oh, I'm going like full Super Saiyan prog rock now, and like which becomes way more apparent as the album goes. But like just like the clean vocals and like the way just they incorporate all these like wonderful harmonies and stuff, it's just like they're like operating at their fullest power, I feel like, at this point.
Oh, their harmonies, like the amount of guitar harmonies that like there's like 75 layers of guitars on this, and
yeah,
the amount of stuff that they do is insane. What I have to say about this one where, and listening in the car, I heard this. So right after right when it kind of goes into that punk beat, so like you have the obsessive obsession, and then when it comes to the live life lyric and it's going like the drum beat's going like that, I don't know what the fuck is happening with those guitars, but this part sounds like utter noise to me, and I don't remember it sounding like this before, but when I was listening to it, I heard it right before this, but that one part, I'm listening to the guitars and it just sounds like they're just strumming to hell, and I like the part where it's like anything
like the live life and it's like dun, dun, yeah dun, 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 kind of yeah
no this one's more this burr. One's faster. It's like the drums are doing that.
Okay. Yeah
it's hard. Yeah, I know I'm not really helping. I know you're not like that, but
I got you now. Yeah
You gotta, but yeah, everything else, the guitars are good, but for some reason, this part, I can't make out what they're playing. And it kind of like, I love the way the song starts, and then this part kind of just throws me off. Like the whole song just kind of, I think it might be my least favorite song on the album.
Oh, wow. Musically, it was one of my favorites.
It was for me before because of how hard it hits in the beginning.
Yeah.
But it's like, everything after that, right when it gets into that live life part, like that's when I just kind of fell off. And after that, I just continued to felt like, like if I have to pick a weakest song for me, it's going to be this one, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. This is the one I talked about getting stuck on this one because I just kept like throwing this album in the car and be like, okay, I'm gonna skip to like the third track, because every time I like start this album from the beginning, I get to my destination before I get very far in the album. But then like I get to this song and I'm like, this rips so hard, I can't listen to anything else right now. But like I love the outro of this album too, where it kind of goes back to that clean chorus of like, it's a must these days, and just like like the guitar is shredding in the background and it just sounds so fucking like triumphant and shit. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. This one is, this was the song where I was like, my metalhead friend was completely right. I owe him, I owe him $5 now. But no, I do think like in retrospect, this album does get much, much better.
Oh my God. Yeah. This is nothing.
Especially revisiting it now.
Yeah. So with that being said, then let's go ahead and jump into the next song, which is Informal Gluttony.
Dope name.
Yeah, right. This one starts off like this is the one that changes like the vibe. You know, we have like a kind of very Egyptian, like Arabic kind of guitar. There you go.
Yeah, I love, I was like, oh, this is different from their other stuff, but in a good way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of really cool, a lot of cool little melodies and a lot of cool guitar licks that they pull off on this one.
Yeah.
Drums are just fantastic the whole way through. Like, it was my problem with Foamborn, it was just that there wasn't enough variation. It just felt like they just ripped through it. It wasn't enough for me. It felt, you know what? We have this on every album. It felt like, you know, another self-titled where it's just nonsense. I'm going to get shot for that probably.
Ooh, hot take.
Yeah. But, yeah, anyways, back to Informal Gluttony. Yeah, I love this beginning. You know, it's got that slow build up after that. And then he comes with cannot close our eyes, like that part.
Yeah.
And then from there, it just keeps going. And it's a
good ass chorus too. The feed me. Right. Feed. Like, it's like,
Yeah. And like that. This is like another good example of like in that chorus where you have a very haunting, like you can hear Tommy's background vocals. He's like, in the background, all this creepy shit. Some of the themes I've been hearing about is kind of like how, you know, we are just living by routines. We're living like robots. 9-to-5 mindset, come home, live your life, that kind of stuff. You know, we're like mice.
Yes.
And yeah, I feel that a lot up until recently, where, you know, I finally started pursuing a career instead of just a 9-to-5 job. And this one definitely hits hard with a lot of the meanings behind it. Where do you sit on Informal Gluttony?
Yeah, now that you've told me that about like the theme of the song, like I'm just looking through these lyrics and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense of what that's about. Yeah. Like
it's always like that.
The visual imagery is like so strong in his lyrics too, where he says like construction paper traffic, corner office destruction, the cityscape burns brighter by the hour. And it's just like, oh man, construction paper traffic. It's like I don't drive to work, luckily, but because I work so close to home. But like, man, I get that. I used to like commute and stuff, and just being like stuck in traffic and just like feeling like a cog in the machine. Just like, fuck.
Oh my God, right?
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, looking at these like force fed attention grabber. When will you learn? First come, first serve. It's like, oh man, yeah. His lyrics are dope.
It's funny how we just need a nudge. We just need someone to say, "Hey, think of this while you're reading these lyrics." And as soon as we go, "Oh, I see it.
I get it now." Yeah.
Can you believe this album came out 14 years ago?
Oh, don't say that. I listened to this when it came out too, which ages me even harder. I was starting my senior year of high school.
Oh my God. I didn't tell my story before we get into what is the best 1-2 hit of any album ever in the existence of albums.
Agree.
my first time seeing them was when this album came out.
Oh my god.
And
I'm so jealous.
Was it? Yeah, it must have been. I think I had a chance to see them at Ozfest, but I was way too late, so I missed them. But I saw them play at a venue that couldn't hold more than 100, 200 people. And they played Colors in its entirety. And then they, you know, got off the stage, came back on, and did Mordecai, probably Selkies or Alaska, and maybe one or two more. Oh my god. And since then, I've seen them do Future Sequence in its entirety, part one and two.
Oh, nice.
And then I've seen them do a festival set, which was so weird. I saw them do a festival slot like way deep into their career, you know. Yeah. not too long ago, which is weird because they went on record as saying when they wrote Colors, they're like, we wanted to write an album that wouldn't let us play, you know, festival sets, because then they only play for 20 minutes. They can play two songs.
Yeah, yeah, right? I was gonna like, say like
it's like the festival I saw them at, they literally played two or three songs. That's it's ridiculous. And this one's got some long ones on it.
Oh yeah, yeah, which we're about to get into.
Yeah, so let's jump into the 11-ish minute masterpiece, Son of Nothing. My favorite song, hands down.
Okay.
I love this song so much. I love this song, dude.
That opening drum bit there.
Well, like, just from, like, instrumentally, yeah. I love everywhere the song goes. It does so many cool things. The clean guitars right before, like when you get into that Son of Nothing bridge, you know, how a lot of the leads, it's so not uplifting, but it's like, it's that journey mentality again.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? And it's epic. There's so many like little nuances to the guitars that I hear every time. They're layered a million times, you know, like they're doing like, like there's that happening. Ooh, yeah, and there's another lead happening over that. And that, like, it's insane. It's listening. When I think of the band, this song always comes in my head. I fucking love this song.
Yeah. About like 8 minutes into this track too, where it turns into what feels like a fucking, like, yeah, eight minutes into this 11 minute song, it turns into like, it almost sounds like a Pink Floyd type moment where it's like,
yeah, a lot of people compare this album to Pink Floyd for sure.
I could see it. Yeah. Especially even the album cover, kind of like with the like solid black and then like the prism colors and stuff.
Right. And
it's just like, oh, he gets, it just goes places. It's like, yeah, I agree. I think this is probably like the best song on the album. This and like the next one. It's just like such an unbelievable explosion of creativity from this band. And it's just like, it's like they threw everything they had into it and it comes out so like immaculately.
But it's funny you say that, because I was reading an article, you know, that had an interview, and they said, you know, writing this was, you know, after Alaska and everything, they put every single thing on the table.
I might have read that same article.
yeah. It was just like they went nuts. They wanted to put every single thing that they can do. They didn't want to have any sort of limitations. They didn't want to be kind of bogged down to any one style. They didn't even release singles when it came out. They released 8 videos, or like one and one song per video. Wow. And each would just have like, it was just kind of a teaser, like a color teaser, and then after 24 hours it'd be gone.
Yeah. And oh wow.
That was it. Yeah, exactly. 24 hours, sorry, I don't know what I said. Dan the bassist says, we were writing a musically conceptual, no rules, nothing left on the table record. We weren't only going to write a record, we were going to live in it, eat, sleep, and breathe it. We were going to push ourselves, and no one was going to hear from us until we brought the album full circle and delivered it as a complete piece.
That makes a lot of sense that they're calling Colors 2 Colors 2.
Yeah, because it's the same thing.
Yeah, I read like a quote from regarding Colors 2, and their guitarist Paul Wagoner said, the Colors is very much our attempt at a do or die statement. We had to establish our identity and be who we really wanted to be in order to have a career. This time around, our industry was shut down for a year. Once tours were canceled due to the pandemic, we were like, we've got to write a record and it's got to be good. We had to do something next level. And that's really what the First Colors feels like, where it's just like, we got to do something, like, we got to break some new ground. So that makes me more excited for Colors too, but it really shows like that, that kind of like they're carrying that ethos into Colors too. And I mean, that's a good, it's a good album to make a sequel to. There's a reason why they're not doing an Alaska too, I guess.
Well, yeah, right, like that, you, the Colors is really the beginning. I mean, I said it with Alaska, like Alaska was with them waking up, but Colors was them going, you know, full Super Saiyan.
Yeah, yeah.
If you know what I mean. Sorry, people that don't like anime or Dragon Ball Z. But yeah, like they talk about a lot of their influences, and they bring up you know, Son of Nothing, where, you know, it's kind of just falls off the rails, you know, 3 minutes in it turns into like kind of like a Disneyland ride. I was like, what are you fucking smoking when you came up with that? And when they did that live, it was just like that. It was perfect.
Yeah, it's almost like a big band swingy type song, and it's like,
yeah.
And like the background, like da 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 da, and it's like, what is happening? I'm all in, but what is happening?
The interpretation from Tommy, and whether this is official or not, you know, leave it up to the internet, but it says that this song is about a man that gets tired of his life. He decides the only natural way to rid himself of this world is to fly to the sun and burn his body. He builds a rocket ship. And then you can see the whole spaceman thing in those lyrics, right?
Oh, yeah.
And starts his journey. The song is the thought process during his voyage towards death. He evaluates all the different aspects of his life and towards the end realizes he had it better than most. He had regret, but there's no turning back because he's already floating towards the sun. The Son of Nothing.
I was going to say, those lyrics make a lot more sense now.
Every time, right? As soon as you read it, every time. So yeah, think of that when you're reading it. But the best part is just like, there's like two endings. There's that one point where it feels like the song is about to end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And then it keeps going a little bit longer. And then you get the... then before you know it... Yeah, exactly. And before you know it, we're right into the Ants of the Sky, and you hear just like...
Yeah, it just like opens with him like mid-scream. Just
fucking ripping. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It goes over. And like if you listen to it on anything, like depending on the platform you listen to, you might hear a skip. But if you're listening to it, you know, on a record, a CD, and probably Spotify has pretty good transition tech that it just goes one into the other and you don't even notice it.
Yeah, it was, I download a lot of my, like, I use Apple Music and I download a lot of like for offline streaming so I don't eat up like cell phone data. But yeah, it was a pretty seamless transition, which I appreciated, because I feel like that every once in a while, you know, you hit that, like, sometimes when a song is supposed to transition and you get like a little half second like gap and you're like, damn it, it's killing my momentum.
This is another one, like, it's songs like this is what makes me, you know, not love Foamborn as much, because like they do so much versus that one.
And
this is the same one. This is another one that has so many layers of guitars. There's a lot of melodies and solos that go across it, and every single one is just so fucking beautiful. Like when you hear them playing these melodies, it almost makes you want to cry. Like they're so,
like
they just, they evoke an emotion in you.
It's like a minute in and it hits that like really nice, like kind of somber, like I think it's like a piano-y bit. And it's just like, you just blasted my ears out of my skull and now you're doing this and it sounds amazing. Like,
And then it just rings out to that.
I feel like we've used the word triumphant a lot in this podcast, but like they did it again. Yeah. And I feel like this is the best one of those.
And usually when you're hearing, you know, a very lead guitars and, you know, a lot of shredding. It just, most of the time you just think like, it's just kind of like constantly picking, ripping, but yeah. I could hum, I almost did, but you know, I had to stop, but I can hum like every single lead through this song. Like they're that good. They're that, you know, grounded in that it just beats into your brain. And then it gets to that part where it's like that kind of carnival keyboard sound. And they kind of like go back and forth between the keyboard playing that and the guitar playing that and then everybody playing that. Do you remember that part?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Like, see, for you know, people listening, just, you know, for clarity, I have had a very busy week and I did not have enough time to just sit down and write notes. This is all from fucking like nostalgic memory. Like, this is all coming to me.
Yeah, like I've barely even looked at the notes I've taken. I've just been like, sometimes I'll like pop up like Apple Music on like really low volume and I'll like kind of skip around so I can recollect certain parts to talk Cheater. About. Damn right. but yeah, no, it's just like most of this I'm just going off of like raw memories of this album.
Yeah, it's, yeah, you can, this is one that you can just press play in your head and just close your eyes and say everything's alone.
That fucking like southern rock ass bluesy jam in the like 3.5 minutes into this thing is awesome. And it's just like, oh cool, there's another thing that they can do like perfectly. So
what are some other parts that you take away from this before we jump into like the whole lyrics thing?
Geez, I like, I was trying to remember, don't mind me, I'm just skipping around a little bit. I think it's about 10 minutes in where it kind of like slows back down again, like clean vocals come back in, and it almost reminds me a bit of like the clean moments in like Dillinger Escape Plan when they got like Greg Puciato as their vocalist, because that dude has like a hell of a like clean vocal presence. But like,
oh my god, I love his voice. He's an angel.
Yeah, you could tell he's inspired by like Mike Patton. We'll save that for the theoretical Dillinger Escape Plan podcast though. Stay tuned, people. Yeah, I don't know. Just like, it's about 11 minutes in, there's like another like really clean guitar solo, and just like, I don't know, this song has it all.
Even
the lyrics page for this, it says, according to the lead vocalist, this is the meat and potatoes of colors, and like, yeah, it sure is.
Dude, I read that too.
Yeah. It's like, man, it sure is.
this one's an, I'm surprised that we're getting a lot of on colors. We're getting a lot of stuff from officially from Tommy here.
Yeah.
And again, I'm, you know, someone could be paraphrasing, but they're quoting Tommy. So let's see what this one says. He said, I wrote this song in an airport. When I listen to music on my headphones, I like to watch the world work and think about what every single person is doing that day. This song is about each one of us creating our own itinerary and flying through our life on one big vacation, trying to find happiness, perfection, and love. It's a bloody, bumpy road for most, and others, it's a wonderful journey. We fly away from our problems and towards our solutions. At least, we think are our solutions. We are the ants of the sky, aka the walking dead. That's the meaning behind that one.
That is
the meat and potatoes of colors. Where did you read the meat and potatoes of colors? Because people are using that in the comments here as well.
From Genius. It says the meat and potatoes of colors, according to lead vocalist Thomas Giles Rogers.
Oh, that's probably where they got it from then.
Yeah.
People are trying to freaking quote this shit like it's their own.
That's so funny. It really does feel like the meat and potatoes of the album. It's like the literal, like, this and Son of Nothing are like the centerpiece to the album, and I feel like it binds the whole thing together.
Exactly, they're right smack down in the middle, and really, like, this is, I said it before, this is the best, like, kind of like 1-2 shot. I mean, they all are one big song, but these two songs together are just when you feel like you know what's happening, then the second one kicks in and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of like I don't know if you ever listened to like Mars Volta at all.
But a little bit, yeah.
They had an album called Francis the Mute in, I think, 2005. And that album only has 5 tracks, and that's because the 5th track is a half hour long. But it's, like, broken up in such a way where it's, like, where is this going to take me next? I have no idea what's going to happen. And, like, this feels like a more, like, cohesive version of something. Like, it's just, it's basically, like, a big, huge prog epic with, like, parts and, like... They do it so well. Like they've refined their like abilities at this point to like perfection.
But it's funny when you hear this, you're like, how do they top it? And once we hear the forthcoming albums, we'll the everything after this is not as fresh in my mind. So
yeah, same here. It's gonna be interesting to rank these after.
Yeah, and just see, like, re-listen to these with a fine ear, an older ear, if you will, and see how we hear it differently. Let's get into Prequel to the Sequel.
We teased this one a while ago.
Yeah. I want to start with the lyrics on this one first. So, from Tommy, this song is a story about the beginning of time, quote unquote, the prequel, and its life building up to its demise, the sequel, also known as Lost Perfection from the Silent Circus. I chose the idea of a lady, quote, Mother Nature, creating a headless person, which is the Earth, and that person living amongst 3 lovers, humans. Branches grow from its headless neck and create nutrients for the world to enjoy. It talks of its life and how everyone soon took all of its qualities for granted, taking all nutrients and natural elements and wilting the tree into the ground, slowly bringing all life to its end. So this is apparently this with Lost Perfection from Silent Circus is all setting up the Parallax story in that concept album. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about here. Like, I know what he's talking about. He's just basically saying we destroyed the world. You know, we don't take care of our planet and we destroyed it. But it's just funny how the image is painted there, you know, where it has to be, you know, Mother Nature created Earth and 3 lovers. And it's funny how that all came together. I don't know the story of Parallax yet because, you know, I haven't dug deep enough into it. Yeah, but
that one I flat out have not listened to yet, so
at all.
Yeah,
like, just you've like, never heard that album?
I've skimmed it like a little bit because my tastes were ever shifting around that time, so yeah. Mm-hmm. that's I'm excited.
Part 2 is going to be a strong contender for a high spot, I will tell you that right now. That's all I'll say.
Ooh, I'm excited.
So this is another great song. This is definitely more on the melodic side, one of the more melodic ones out of all of them.
Oof, that opening guitar is perfect.
Yeah, it's very much you get a little bit of it feels like, and it's not just because of the name in it, but it feels like kind of it feels like it could work in Back to the Future. It kind of like in some of the future sequences.
I understand that. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, right.
When I first listened to this album, I was like the opening guitar lick, because I had like, I didn't have the depth of musical knowledge I do now, but like, mm-hmm. or just like the listening depth. But I was like, man, this sounds like it could go on like a Coheed and Cambria album. And I told that to my metalhead friend, and he was like, shut up. Because he hated the shit out of him, but I was just like, I mean, I feel like it's something like Claudio Sanchez would just like bust out real quick and like and have a big.
Somebody was saying it sounds like it belongs like at the beginning of Star Fox.
Ooh, yeah, I could see that too.
Yeah. So yeah, this one is a color track. What do you have to say about it?
But Prequel to the Sequel. Other than what we just talked about,
other than it rocks.
Yeah, other than it is it. You know what? I'm gonna say it's a real barn burner, John.
Oh, he brought back the barn burner.
We need an air horn edited in. It's like a burp. But I don't know. Just like the guttural screams that are like 6-ish minutes in, where he's not really doing like death metal screams. He's just like Chester Bennington yelling.
Yeah.
And just like, it's just like so high energy and like gets me pumped. It's just, yeah, it's another great song.
Get you jazzed, don't it?
Yeah. It gets me bopping.
Bebopping. Yeah, I know. Bebopping rocksteady.
I was thinking that in my head and I was like, oh, I hope he says it.
Say it.
Say the thing.
Say it. Apologies to, you know, a lot of people. I'm sure everyone was expecting this to be our most in-depth, longest episode, with it being Colors. It's hard for us. It just evokes so much emotion. We feel like we've kind of covered it with what we're describing, and
all I can do is gush about this album.
Yeah, like, it's, again, you know, I do have the excuse of not doing the proper prep work prior to this one, as this album deserves it, but it should go to show you that being able to talk about this album without the prep work kind of stands its testament to how powerful it is.
Yeah, you know, it's really a special album. I think, like, you know, this is one that I think of as like an all-time favorite, not just in their discography, but like of everything I listen to. This is one that I consistently go back, or if like someone's like, hey, recommend me something heavy, I'm like, oh, Colors or Iron Works, but hey, Colors, check it out. And like, for a good reason.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. So with the next one, we have Viridian, which is just an instrumental.
A nice sigh of relief, just to calm down a bit.
Right. Well, it's weird. I actually don't remember how they played this one live. I mean, we'll do a Colors live something probably at the end of everything. We'll review that one. But,
oh yeah, I'd be excited to listen to that.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing it, but you know, watching it is definitely. here's a little back and forth someone wrote in the forums here, where they said, so going back between the band members. So Tommy says, hey guys, we need a song to show off our badassery on this album. Anyone have any ideas? Paul says, don't we have enough songs that show off our badassery? Tommy says, silence, fool, I demand more.
Oh my God.
Dan says, well, we have prequels. Dan says, well, we have prequel to the sequel done and White Walls 2, but we need something to fill in the gap. Tommy says, yeah, instrumental? And then Dan says, yeah, I'll write a bass solo to prove how awesome I am as well. Blake, what do I get to do? Tommy, you just hit the occasional hi-hat or in ride or something, then do a cymbal roll at the end. Make it seem like you're involved. Oh, that's what's up. That's someone's description of this song.
Man, they nailed it.
yeah, that's it right there.
It sounds like that exactly.
It's funny. It's like an excuse for Dan, the bass player, to show off, but like... You hear him so prominently in so many songs that it's not even a big deal. Like, he doesn't need to show off. He shows off all the time, but
yeah, like, oh, we're gonna really open the stage for you to just fucking flex now. Like,
yeah, feel free to just go ahead and just, you know,
channel your inner Thundercat. Yeah. Even though Thundercat wasn't releasing music quite yet, but well, he was
listen to your heart.
Yeah. I was trying to think of that one bass guitarist who's like super, it's Victor Wooten, that's who I was thinking of. Like, channel your inner Victor Wooten. Oh dude, I got some things to send you. Anyway.
So after this beautiful piece of music is done, we have White Walls, which is the final track, and it is really their, it's a great way to close an album.
Yes. Longest track on the album, too.
Yeah. 14 minutes and 13 seconds. This is another one that's just like, it has, see, I gotta keep going back. Like, you can't tell me that, you know, Foam Born, Decade of Statues, B is not the weakest song on this album after hearing every single song after it, you know? Like,
I mean, my cop-out answer is Viridian being the weakest track, but.
But it's not, like, because it has so much more going to it.
Yeah, it's still great too. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to pick a least favorite. The more I think about it, it's just like they're all like great at worst.
I know.
Yeah, gun to my head though.
Gun to your head, yeah.
Just shoot me anyway.
Just take me up now.
I refuse to pick a least favorite. They're all my children.
So this one, it's about growing as a band, as individual musicians. Tommy wrote the song after they did Ozfest, which that was the year I went to go to it. And they said the music business really shows how stagnant and boring popular music is. Everyone tries to sound and look the way they are supposed to in order to get big. Obviously, all bands aren't like this, but it seems that more and more people are starting bands to become rock stars, not because they love music. This song is about growing and realizing what you need to do in order to make yourself happy in music. Because when it's all said and done, this is what people hear when we die. When I started playing music, it was a blank canvas, white walls. And this journey I've lived so far are the paintings that will be seen when I die. That's fucking deep.
Dope. Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah, I mean, he's got an excellent point, too. Like, the art you create and you put out into the world is completely timeless. Like, that's going to outlive you. So, like, when this band is no more...
Hopefully, anyways.
I would tell you, yeah, unless everything gets exploded. But, like, you know, like, something happens to this band and they cease to exist, like, this stuff will be what defines them and what, like, that's the lasting impression they leave.
It's their legacy.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, that's a hell of a statement. Yeah.
And I can vouch for that in the sense that, you know, when I was in a band, when I would write music, I have always, you know, I take influences from what I'm currently listening to, but I'm not trying to write something that sounds like something else. If it ends up sounding like that, it's just, I've always written what I want to hear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not limiting myself to any sort of genre or anything like that. If I want it to sound like this, I'll make it sound like that. And I agree with them. Like, they came to the conclusion a lot earlier how it's stale, you know. New bands come out to this day. I check out the new metal tracks on Spotify every Friday, and I'll listen to, you know, 10 or 20 songs, and I just go, why do I keep hearing the same song every week? How am I hearing these bands? Like, how are these bands writing the same song over and over?
Yeah, people find a winning formula and they stick to it, man.
Like, but it's, but it's not these... even... Go ahead.
Hmm? Oh, I was going to say, but it's, yeah. It's... Oh.
just say it, damn it.
I was going to say, yeah, people find like a winning formula and they sure stick to it, but sometimes it doesn't quite take off the way they want it to.
But like, winning formula, like, for example, Lamb of God. Lamb of God is stuck in a loop. They've become boring to me. Like, their new album sounds the same as their last two, three albums.
Yeah.
They used to be great, but you know, now, you know, their drummer left because he's like, I'm not challenged anymore. This is, you know, we're not doing anything new anymore. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. But like, those are the people that get stuck in a pattern. You know, they're huge. People want the same music over and over again, no matter what they think they say. But then you have new bands that come out, and you know, I hear a band come out and I'm like, oh, Killswitch Engage wrote that song like 20 years ago. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they laid down the blueprint.
Yeah, it's like when you hear people writing the same song that another band wrote, like, come on, man.
Like, and it's like, it's one thing to take inspiration from these old bands and like adding your own spin to it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, imitation is the highest form of flattery or whatever. But like, you want to like put your own unique spin on it. But like, yeah, sometimes like you see it a lot in like the top 40 or like the popular like rap scene.
Oh my God, don't even get me started.
You see like one of the like trendsetters, you see like a Juice WRLD, or you see like a Travis Scott or something like that pop off, and you're like, everyone's like, okay, I got to do the psychedelic trap thing now too, but it's not going to be anything different. It's just going to sound like that because Travis Scott is of kajillionaire with his McDonald's meal now. So like, I can do that. And then it doesn't do that. It just sounds the same.
Yeah. No genre is immune from this. It's, it happens. I hear it a lot, especially in rap music, you know, when there's a certain style of rhythm that someone mimics and then everyone just starts doing the same thing over and over. Right. But it happens a lot in metal. I feel like, you know, even when old bands come back to light and they're, you know, like your Testaments and your... drawing a blank, Accept, you know, bands like old thrash bands, like... There's just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Go to sleep.
Make some room for the young, exciting bands.
I mean, Iron Maiden just put out a new album, and like their quote unquote new albums have never done anything to me. It's just slower versions of their older songs, and it's just,
yeah, you got, that's kind of how I felt about like recent Megadeth albums and stuff, where it's just exactly, like, man, y'all are just going through the motions now, aren't you?
Well, bands like that aren't going to change, you know.
No,
that long into their lifespan, they are not going to change.
And when they do, we get Saint Anger.
But you know what though, like I feel like Metallica is a weird exception to the rule, because I feel like they sometimes do change and sometimes they don't. Like, they change enough that makes it feel fresh.
I got to give it to them. They took some bold risks there for a minute, and they didn't really pay off. Yeah, Saint Anger was a bold risk that did not pay. Also, Lulu with Lou Reed. That was
we don't talk about that. That
very
was...
bold album. I kind of fuck with it, even though it's a garbage fire. It's one of my favorite.
I could not.
It's one of my favorite dumpster fires, personally. But
of all the dumpster fires, I could not listen to that album.
Yeah, it's something. But anyway,
I had a soft spot for Saint Anger. It was because it came out at the time in my life where, you know, I was into Slipknot and Linkin Park and everything that was, like, you know, pissed off, right? So
yeah,
they were definitely trying to tap into that.
That's actually one thing I really admire about that album, is just how ugly and raw it sounds. You know,
For the snare.
Even if their ideas didn't really pay off super well, I admire just how like real it sounds, because they were having a lot of internal strife during that time anyway. So it really captures how angry they were. So hence Saint Anger. Even if the songs themselves aren't like particularly great, but I do like Frantic a lot, though. I don't care what anybody says.
Frantic, tick, tick.
My lifestyle determines my death style.
Yeah, I would say like the lyrics were lame, and so were the patterns, but they were they were lame in the sense that they were like B movie cheesy.
Yeah, enough about that.
This is not the same Anchor podcast. We're getting too deep in the woods. Do you have any like standout parts for White Walls? Like, it's 14 minutes. It's hard to remember the whole thing, but it's got. This is like a culmination of everything that you've heard in this album. It has every single thing that they've teased in this album right in here. Is there anything for you that kind of sticks out for you?
About 5.5 minutes in, there's like these clean vocal layers that are happening. Like, there's I'm trying to remember the lyrics, but it's kind of like you hear that dun 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 dun, 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 and he's like laying his like other vocals on top of that, and it's just like creating this like amazing like melody, and like, I don't know, they really like flex the production techniques on this album, I think. Like, it's just really expansive sounding.
I think what we'll do, and you know, people listening, if you want this, let us know, but I really want to do a review later after we're all done of the Colors Live album and just kind of really break down some of these layered parts and hear how they transition live, because that's the thing, right? You hear so many guitars, so many vocals. How does that transition live? Like, if that sounds dead and empty, it's a good album, but you know, that live, you need to have that there too.
Yeah, that's true. It's always interesting to see how they adapt to like a live setting, especially for like bands that are like reliant on studio flourishes and stuff. Not that like Between the Buried Me have always relied on that stuff, but in Colors you could tell they like had a bit more of a budget going on, and they just like, they really just went all out on making it sound like big. So it's like, it's curious to see like how they adapt that to a live setting. I always like when they switch it up a little bit, so that like the live show sounds a little different and like personal in a way. But I definitely want to listen to that live, like Colors Live now. Like, I'm curious to see how it sounds stacked up to this.
Well, we will, we're gonna do all of the studio albums. And then once we're done, if people want to hear it, we're going to do all the bonus stuff. We're going to do some side projects. We're going to do the live albums. They did Future Sequence Live. I think they did Coma Ecliptic Live and Colors Live. And, we'll even tap into the Anatomy Of, even though they're pretty straightforward covers. I feel like we can take some interesting things out of that.
Yeah. I just get to talk about other bands I like.
Yeah, exactly. But let's bring it up to the whiteboard here. Let's look at our rankings. At number one, we have Alaska. At number two, we have The Silent Circus. At number three, we have Self-Titled. Where do you put Colors on your list?
Number one, like easily. It was my first Between the Buried and Me album. Yeah. And like, I think just like Alaska is an amazing album and, you know, highly regarded for a very good reason. But I think this just builds and expands on those ideas in such a like wonderful way that it creates like, you know, I don't throw around the word classic a lot unless I'm like kind of joking, like, oh, it's classic. But like, I truly think this is like a hallmark in the genre. And they, you know, Between the Buried and Me have stayed in a very like singular lane that has not been like copied by many other bands. And so I think like this deserves the label of classic. I think looking back on it, it holds up so incredibly well. And like, yeah, I think it's a classic.
Yeah, I agree with, you know, I kind of project everything you just said too. It's definitely my number one so far. It can't be touched. You know, the fact that 14 years later, it still holds this strong and that these melodies are still strong for us in our head. It, you know, says a ton to us. So we got number one, we got Colors. Number two, we got Alaska. Number three, we got Silent Circus. And number four, we got Self-Titled. It's going to be interesting going on here. So the next album we have is The Great Misdirect. Interesting to see where that goes. I mean, do you have any history with that one?
I did listen to it right when it came out. I was very excited because it was like, oh my God, it's the follow-up to Colors. How's it going to sound? And I don't remember much about it. I kind of remember thinking I remember thinking it was good, but nothing as like impactful as Colors. So it'll be interesting to revisit it now because I haven't listened to it in such a long time.
Especially when you're deep into it, and it has at that time one of their longest songs, which was 17 minutes. That's nutty. And this is what they're performing on their current tour, which starts today, August the 3rd. I don't know if you got tickets, but in the States they're performing kind of like a greatest hits, and then they're performing The Great Misdirect in its entirety.
Whew.
So
yeah, geez.
Yeah. Which includes the 18-minute long song Swim to the Moon.
Yeah, that album is it's the album overall I think is like just like five or six minutes shorter than Colors, but yeah, it's only six tracks long, so they really progged out on The Great Misdirect, it looks like. So
here's something interesting before we close off. Tommy said that it's a companion piece to Son of Nothing, which kind of feels like that when you look at it and hear it. But he said the song is a prequel to the Parallax Saga following this album. So, like, more Parallax Saga. Like, dude, we are going to have to do, like, block off some time for the Parallax Saga, man. We're going to have to go deep on this one.
We need to go hard and just like become an analysis channel.
Yeah, like if you're reading this right now or reading this, if you're listening to this right now and you have a lot to say about Parallax, please email us at theendlessobsessionpod@gmail.com or reach out to me on Twitter at John S. Bernardo, reach out to me on Instagram at Does Machines, reach out to Josh at Josh.zone. Please, we want to hear from people about Parallax because I've never dived into what this, it's always been for me, music is just music. I don't get deep into it like that. It's just how it makes me feel. I've never really kind of branched into concept albums on what they are. So if you're listening to this and you have a lot to say about Parallax, please reach out to us or hop on our Discord, which the link is in the show notes of this episode, and just let us know. I will put your shit on the air. We can talk about it. any closing words, Joshua?
No, I think that's it. This album owns. It's so good.
This album owns.
Yeah, I'm really excited to go into like future albums because it'll be slightly uncharted territory.
I think you'll hear stuff that you're like, oh, I remember this, and yeah. And then it'll kind of like it'll play with you a little bit like that, where you'll remember it, but
yeah,
you don't remember it completely.
Yeah, I'm real excited.
All right, well, thank you guys for joining us, and off to the sky, into the son of nothing, because we're the ants of the sky. I don't know. I just kind of tried to wing that one off the top of my head. It didn't work. Have a good night, everybody.